welcome to In the Zone with Deremy and Jose. Jose, how's it going, man?
What's going on, Deremy? How you doing, brother?
I can't complain. It's great always to be talking about, you know, classic sports with you. And I'm glad, you know, it's been fun. And I've really loved because, you know, talking about, you know, comedy movies and wrestling. But, you know, it's good to get back to what this house that you and I built, the foundation, and that's connecting the past to the present with sports.
Yeah, it's funny because I've been like telling people, you know, on our past couple shows, and they're like, oh, I thought you were a sports show. And I was like, well, sports and entertainment.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah, you know, sports entertainment. I think it's sometimes good just to mix it up and show we can.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can talk about that. But, you know, definitely it's I kind of after the last one, I was like, man, I'm jonesing to get back into talking some classic sports. You know,
yeah, I understand. I was too.
So it's, you know, good to get back into it. And this is a topic, an idea that we had talked about at the beginning, you know, when we were first coming up with the idea for the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's, you know, kind of our, you know, we'll come up with the name, I guess, later, but like our redraft. And this is the first of something that we'll be continuing to do, you know, throughout the show with classic, you know, NFL, NBA drafts, and maybe some ones that weren't classic and talking about the mistakes made there. But Jose, you really had this year, you know, this one stuck out to you. I wanted to ask, like, why was this one for the NFL drafts of all the ones we could pick? This one really, it seemed, jumped out to you.
Yeah, I mean, because it's easy. And what we're going to talk about today is that, you know, we're going to do the redraft, the 2004 NFL draft, which is highlighted by, you know, that three-headed monster at quarterback, right? Like, you don't want to talk about Eli. Everybody talks about Eli Manning, Philip Rivers, you know, Ben Roethlisberger. But, you know, throughout this draft, there's a lot of talent, you know. And I almost forgot how much talent there was in this draft until I started looking at it all over again. And, you know, there's some, you know, all-time greats, you know, in this, even in this top 10, you know. And, you know, there's so many storylines with this draft. You know, obviously, and we'll get into it with the first pick with Eli Manning. But, you know, it's just some really compelling stories and, again, some really interesting players and fits. And my idea on this, my thought process was, all right, like, say this player didn't go to this team. How would that team from there on in look? You know, how would that change, like, that franchise? And I think if a certain players were adjusted in this draft, the trajectory of a couple of these teams will be totally different.
Yeah, I think you know, a couple things, and I agree, I had forgotten how many great players were in this draft. You know, you look at that, you look at the top 10, and a lot of times for the NFL, the drafts that get talked about the most are the ones that have, you know, quarterbacks at the top of mm-hmm. it, and that, you know, QB class, and, you know, remember, you know, 83 and then 98 with Manning or Leaf and 99. And then this one was really something else with this three-headed monster. But I agree that, and you're right that you look at it, this one, I think of you going back, you know, it's 16 years ago, the aftermath and the shockwaves of this draft still affects the NFL to this day. And that says something, you know, about how powerful and impactful this draft was.
Yeah, and yeah, you're right. There's players in this draft who are still playing at a decent level, you know, at a decent level, a pretty high level. I'll go there. And again, but when I look at this draft, man, and I just look and I always just think, man, if this player could have went here, like, how would this player be in that city? Like, we've talked about this off the air. You know, how different players would have been playing somewhere else. Like, how would they fare out? And, you know, I honestly also think that some of these great players in this draft lucked out in being drafted where they were drafted at, because if it was shifted a little bit, I honestly think their careers would have not been as long, and it would have been a lot more scrutiny on certain players.
No, I think that's a great point. And, you know, we're kind of, you know, for everyone, we're going to be looking at, it's kind of going back and forth. Well, not really back and forth, but we'll be looking at the headlines and the stories and what was going on with that draft in 2004. And then at the end, Jose and I will go back and forth 1 through 10, not the whole draft. You know, we're not going to, you know, we love the show. We do have lives outside the show. So we can't, you know, we're not going to redo all, you know, all 7 rounds. Let's go. Like, we can't do that. But we're going to, you know, back and forth through the first 10 picks and kind of with revisionist history, it's kind of really looking at not, and we're not going to be doing like, oh, well, in 04, the Chargers needed QB help and O-line help, so they take this guy. It's more like the best careers and like who turned out, you know, that the greatest.
Yeah.
Now that we can look back, you know, 16 years later. But Jose, the headline going into the draft back in 04, it was, you know, Eli Manning, really. Yep. It started with him, and he has the name. He had the numbers in the SEC. He, you know, went to Ole Miss. Archie's son went back home, redid the wrong in Ole Miss's eyes that Peyton did, going to Tennessee, and was tearing up the SEC at this time, and was pretty much, it seemed like, the lock to be number one going into this draft.
Yeah, and deservedly so, because he had a, you know, good college career, and you mentioned it, everything else that went along with it. Now, in my draft, is he the first player I'm taking? Absolutely not. But in 04, I feel as though, deservedly so, he should have been the first pick.
Yeah, I think so. And you look at it because at the time, you know, you see the other quarterbacks, Phillip Rivers, NC State, Ben Roethlisberger, Miami of Ohio. Now, I can say for me, I had kind of known, I was watching the Mac a little bit more back then, you know, being a guy, you know, we're Philly, so Temple kind of having to be moved to the Mac. So Big Ben was on my radar actually more than Phillip Rivers playing in the ACC back then for me.
Yeah, Phillip Rivers for me as well. This was kind of a surprise. I mean, but again, you know, this isn't just based off, you know, people's college careers. It's based off of, you know, talent and for a quarterback, you know, all those other measurables, arm talent and all that stuff, size. And he has all of that. He had all of that, obviously, this year in 04. And, you know, I think, again, he was the surprise for me. I mean, leading up to the draft, you know, you heard his name started getting a lot of momentum and a lot more momentum. And then obviously when draft day came, you knew he was going pretty high. And again, Ben, Big Ben as well. I felt the same way, just trying to watch a little bit of Temple football. You would see him and you would get those games on ESPN, like on a Thursday night or something.
Right.
You know, and you would catch Miami of Ohio and you would see Big Ben play. And I just remember watching him and I was like, man, that dude is huge. You know, like, but, you know, and again, this is another guy who went, I think, to the perfect scenario. And I'll definitely get into that later. But yeah, but Phillip Rivers, for me, was the surprise of this draft.
And a lot of it, it seems, comes from the Chargers at the time, coached by Marty Schottenheimer, were the team, you know, the NFL, you get two coaching staffs from the NFL to coach the Senior Bowl. And it seems like where Rivers jumped out was the Chargers and Marty Schottenheimer and his staff were coaching one of the teams in the Senior Bowl. And they got to coach Phillip Rivers. You know, they're with them for that week, and they coach them for the game on Saturday. And they really kind of came away and were really impressed by him there. And, Jose, I kind of wanted to ask you, because that's not the – you know, we heard stories like that before. Stories since, and where, you know, comboed through a combine, pro day, maybe, you know, Senior Bowl. These things that really, let's be real, the college seasons, it doesn't count. Yeah. But players, not just quarterbacks, but a lot of players' stocks rising. How do you feel about that?
I don't know. I mean, because I don't know. That's a tough one because a lot of players don't play in those games, you know, and especially a lot of the top players. So, you know, but I can understand how a coach can get enamored by a player by just coaching them, you know, for those couple of weeks or whatever the amount is. And I mean, you get a real deep dive into that player. You see all the tools and everything, especially if you're looking at a quarterback, you know, you can definitely put them, you know, get them in those practices, those drills, and get a real hands-on look at, you know, what this possible draft pick is going to look like. And, you know, the combine part for me is it makes me laugh sometimes, you know, because, you know, especially we look at it now and everybody's worrying about how fast these wide receivers are, you know, the 40 times and things like that. And, you know, some of these fastest guys are not really good wide receivers. And I just put I feel like teams put too much stock in these combines, man, you know, and I'm a big proponent of like film and like, what is this player actually doing? You know, I like taking players from like big schools because they're playing in those big environments and those big games. And, you know, for me, that measures a lot in a player. I'm not just worrying about him running around some cones and how many times is he bench pressing this amount. That's a big part of it too. Don't get me wrong, but I feel as though more of the game time, like, you know, what this player did in these bigger games, to me, that has more of an impact later on in the NFL.
No, I agree. And I'll say this. I think the Senior Bowl, I can see, you know, because that is game play. And that is, you're getting the practice and you're seeing them interact with teammates. You know, they're not really their teammate, but they're teammates for that week. And, you know, those drills, you know, you watch the Senior Bowl drills, like, you know, O-line going up against D-line. Like, it's competitive. So, the Senior Bowl, I can get, and obviously, you know, we all know we wouldn't be doing this show, but like, you know, it worked out for the Chargers, and they didn't. Phillip Rivers, maybe some people say a Hall of Fame quarterback, so it was right. But for me, the combine and the pro days are where I have the biggest issue. And hey, you know, when Jose and I first met, he knows I with my family I went to the combine. You know, in 2019, and it was an experience. But I think it's something that, in obvious, you know, what's going on with Corona and everything. But to me, Jose, I'll just say this: it's something that, unless things change, hopefully they do get better by the time March comes along. But you can have the combine, and no one has to be there, and I think that's kind of like. And granted, everyone in the country's had to adjust things, but it's like, I think it shows how it's not important, really. And don't get me wrong, I watch it because I'm a sports fan, a football fan, and college football fan. So I watch it too, but it's really not that important.
Yeah, I mean, and if you have a guy who's on your radar, if you're a team, an organization, or a coach, and I mean, I can definitely understand you wanting to go and kind of see some measurables like speed and whatever, depending on the position. But all these guys are fast, right? Like, all these wide receivers are fast for the most part. Yeah. And, you know, my when I'm looking at, like, a wide receiver or whatever, like, yeah, I want him to be fast. But, I mean, he's got to be able to catch the ball. He's got to be able to do a lot of run routes. Like, all of that has to play into it. And I'm not saying they don't look at any of that stuff at the combine. But, again, I feel personally like you'll see more of that in game. And, you know, if this, you know, especially – again, and it's not just about the bigger schools, but I just feel like, you know, if you're drafting high or whatever, like, you can get a real glimpse of what a player is going to look like in the NFL. If, you know, you're looking at a, you know, wide receiver, let's just say from this past year at like LSU and what he was doing against Alabama and all these other SEC teams, like, you know, if he was stepping up and having big games, I feel like you're going to, that's going to correlate as well into the NFL for the most part. I'm not saying it's always a slam dunk, but, you know, I think for me, that's a better gauge than, you know, just having them clocking them on a 40 and having them run around some cones.
Yeah. And I think one thing I'll say for me, which I agree with, but I guess it's a little slant and it leads back into the 04 draft, is I am with you on players playing at big schools. Bigger schools always jumps out to me more than other players who play at small schools, except one position, and that's quarterback for me. And that's where kind of Big Ben, and, you know, we even see it, you know, from, even though he's Carson Wentz now, different guy. That to me means something when you know what it's like to be the guy, you know, Josh Allen in Wyoming, we've seen, you know what it's like to be the guy, and you don't have a bunch of all Americans, first round talent around you, you know. And I think for quarterbacks, I kind of look at that, and that's where, you know, obviously that's the most important position in sports, and it gets a lot of attention. But I kind of get hesitant because if I see you, if you're at, you know, not to knock him, but like Matt Leinart at USC, when he's surrounded by so much talent, I'm like, you know, that's a culture shock where, hey, you really just had to walk on the field except for maybe one or two games a season, and you know you were way better than the other team. Then you're going, you know, to a team that's been struggling for a while a lot of times and not that great talent, and you're going to get punted, you're going to lose, and you're going to get hit. How do you respond to it? And that's kind of where Big Ben stuck out to me. And really kind of going into it, you hear that the Giants, who had the fourth pick, they had Eli at one, but they had Big Ben as their number two prospect.
Yeah, and that's, and I agree with what you said. And just to go back into that a little bit, like, you know, I can remember watching an interview with Steve Mariucci, who, you know, coached a lot of really good quarterbacks, coached some great quarterbacks, obviously. And he kind of mentioned that too, you know, like these guys coming into the NFL, you know, they go in college, you know, it's funny because I was thinking the same thing with Joe Burrow coming out this year. And I was like, you know, is this guy a product of having Justin Jefferson and all these other like amazing wide receivers and talent in LSU, or did he make them better? You know, and
right.
Obviously, as we see, it's kind of a little bit of both. You know what I mean? Like they were all good. And, yeah. But what Mariucci was saying, it's like some of these guys come in, and if you're a high draft pick, you know, you're going to a bad team, right? And it's like you're going to a bad team. Probably O-line is shitty. Like you're going to get knocked around a little bit, and you can look at these guys' eyes and see if they want parts of that. You know what I mean? And he used to say it a lot of times. A lot of guys he would see, and, you know, they would get shell-shocked like you mentioned. And I can see how that can happen, you know, because like you said, you're in college and you're playing with the best wide receivers in the country, and these guys are wide open, and it's easy to hit those throws, you know, hit those throws. But in the NFL, you got to squeeze them in those tight windows. And if you're on a bad team, you're probably not playing with a lot of good talent. So, no, I can agree with that point, though.
You know, so we look at it, and it's interesting. Eli going into this draft, the waves were start, and it's funny, it kind of it gets forgotten now. And granted, there's been so much that's happened with Eli's career, and you know, he's won two Super Bowls and all that stuff. But and we'll see how it plays, because that carried with John
Elway. Oh, yeah.
It's very similar to what happened in 83. That's still, I mean, hey, we talked about it on, you know, check the archives, 30 for 30 episode. There's a 30 for 30 a few years ago about the 83 draft and Elway and Marino. Elway to Marino, and it's still a part, not the biggest part, but it's still a big part of the narrative of John Elway. And Jose, it kind of seems like it doesn't really have that effect with Eli, but that was a big deal. Eli was kind of a villain going in, because he did not want to play for the Chargers.
Yeah, I think, and I agree with that, I think the issue with Elway was more Elway speaking out and saying, I'm not going to play for that organization. Eli did come out and say he wasn't playing for the Chargers a couple days before the draft. But a lot of folks thought that was more Archie Manning, you know, have his you know, telling, he was in Eli's ear and letting him know that he shouldn't be going to the Chargers, because his concern, because the Chargers at that point in time, that organization was not run well. You know what I mean? And I don't blame Eli for not wanting to go there, but you know, that they had like four winning seasons in the last like 20 before the 04, like in 20 years or something like that. Like they were not a good organization, but they were up and coming. Like they were on the build and they had some pretty good talent on that team. And but I think personally, I think the reason why Eli isn't killed for this as much, or it doesn't hang with him, because you don't even hear about this anymore, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's more because people thought it was more Archie's doing than Eli's.
Yeah. And for Elway, a lot of it was his dad as well, too, back in the day. But you're right. You saw John was speaking out. John had a kind of a mix of you know, later on we see Eli and then even – 2019 with Kyler, with the whole baseball back and forth thing, you know, John kind of, he set the table for these guys, you know, in a way. But it is interesting because Archie to this day, and I don't know, and I like Archie Manning a lot. I really respect him. And it's back and forth, because if you read and watch things, Archie was not, which makes me like him. Like, as a guy, a father who was a former pro athlete, a lot of times you see, hell, you see a lot of dads who weren't athletes. They're all over their child's career and trying to play through them. Archie, you read, did not do that. And he says that, we've seen interviews within the past couple years that was Eli and his agent, Tom Condon. It wasn't him. I don't know about that, though. I'm kind of I definitely think it wasn't just Archie if he had a play in it. But I don't know if he was just going for the ride, as he kind of lets it be.
Yeah, because even if you look at the documentary, The Book of Manning, which is, I thought was a pretty good documentary, and that's emphasized in that documentary how he would be in the stands with, like, sunglasses on and, like, kind of like trying to be in disguise, and which is pretty cool to look at, because you'll see, and you said it, that you'll see other parents on the sidelines, like, and I don't know, I don't think that's cool, but. I have a gut feeling that Archie had a big, his involvement was bigger than what he's come, making it out to be. And because I read an interview too, that he was saying, like, what people were saying, that he didn't want Eli to go through what he went through in New Orleans and, playing on all those shitty teams for so long. And it looked like the Chargers were that team as well. I don't think they were as bad as those New Orleans teams, obviously, but he didn't want Eli going through that. And I guess as a father, like, I can definitely understand that, but I don't know. Like, again, that Chargers team was starting to turn things around, and I don't think they would have been as good if Eli was there, but hindsight again is 2020.
Yeah. And what kind of, I kind of wonder about, because 6 years earlier, Peyton, you look at it, the two teams, the Colts were terrible. Now, they had hired, Bill Polian and Jim Mora, but the Colts had like 15 straight losing seasons. And when the Colts were in Indy, we're too young, but we know all about the Baltimore Colt days. That was long gone. When the Colts went to Indy, that was nothing but garbage for years until – Peyton Manning got there in 98, and then the next year, 99, they turned it around. So to me, this is just me in a hypothetical. I'm wondering if, because Archie is a caring dad, he backs off, but seeing, because remember, 98 is down between, it's Manning or Leaf, it's the Colts and the Chargers. And if there's things that lingered from like 98 in that process, and obviously, the Chargers continue to lose up until this time, really. But if there's something lingering there, and that's just me.
The article I was reading in I think it was a Bleacher Report, kind of mentioned that too. Not that whatever issues happened during that draft, but more of the handling of Ryan Leaf by the Chargers. And that was a big factor was a big factor in Archie Manning telling Eli not to go to the Chargers because the way they handled, the way they handled their quarterbacks, they mentioned Ryan Leaf, they mentioned Drew Brees, and obviously Brees was on this team, but the way they were handling quarterbacks, it scared Archie Manning. That's another reason why he didn't want Eli to go there again, apparently.
Let's be real. He did get blasted for it, but being real, the Manning, it's even grown even more how much their football royalty. But even in 04, in the book, you're right, Book of Manning, watch it, it's ESPN, a documentary, really good. But how much of it do you think it was, in a way, kind of flaunting? I'm not saying on purpose or consciously or who knows. I don't know them personally. But kind of flaunting that they are a big name in football and in sports.
Yeah, they're flexing their muscles a little bit. Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I can see that too. I mean, because, people love them, and whatever. Like, Like, whatever. But I can see that being the case as well, because, again, like, and it's funny that you said it, because I haven't really thought about that, but you don't hear about this stuff. And it's like, when people were interviewing Eli early in Eli's career and they were asking him about this stuff, he would say stuff. He would like be super like ignorant about it. Oh, I forgot all about that. Like, and it's just, it's funny because, you know, you don't see that much out of Eli Manning, except when you bring this topic up in regards to the draft and, you know, in draft day and what happened. And, you know, he's quick to shut that down, which is again, it shocks me because Elway, you know, he was very open and in public. And I think that was the difference for me. But I mean, and his camp was 100% right. You know what I mean? Like, did you see what happened with the Colts? What was it, the 2 years later, or not even that? I think the next year they moved, right? And
yeah.
But yeah, it is surprising that you know, this doesn't come up at all for Eli Manning anymore.
And I think, yeah, and it's an interesting thing because most players, you know, when you're coming into the draft, that's the thing. The draft is the draft. And most players do not get to flex and kind of influence and dictate where they go, let alone. But then it's also the flip side. Hey, someone has to be a top prospect. Not everyone can be. So, you know, it's just, hey, you know, big dogs eat first a lot of times. But it is interesting on that, and I think there is a thing about how it goes about it and how you go about it. Because I do think, you know, in sports, in all, not just football and with quarterbacks, but in all of them, we blame certain people too much, and then we also give them too much praise. And I do think you're right, and this draft shows it probably better than almost any, in my opinion, when it comes to quarterback play. But it really shows, like, It's about the individual, but it's also about where they're going, the culture, the franchise, the management, the coach, who else they're surrounded with. All that plays a factor, you know. I don't know what Peyton Manning would be if he goes number two. You know, I'm not saying he would be bad, because I think we see Peyton's drive, his work ethic, but that's a lot of struggle, you know. It doesn't turn around that quick. We know if he goes number two in that draft, and that's not a knock on Peyton. He's a top five quarterback of all time, in my opinion, but it does play a factor into it. You know, hey, Donovan, the Philly guy, if Cleveland takes him first, we're not talking about Donovan McNabb, in my opinion. I don't think we are. And that's not a knock on Donovan. I just think it's a bad situation. So it is important where you're going to. And who can help, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And organizational philosophy as well, right? Like, you know, because you brought up Peyton Manning, and, you know, Bill Polian was there, and, you know, you had Marvin Harrison was there, but Polian was going to start adding more pieces. You know what I mean? Like, he added Andrew James, you know, Reggie Wayne. All these pieces started to come together. And I don't know if that happens in San Diego, right? Like, you have at this time, I think it was Marty Schottenheimer was coaching. Well, no. I'm sorry. I'm thinking this is 90 something. So, but just philosophy again, like, are the Chargers going to revamp their whole system, you know, have Peyton Manning calling plays like he did in Indy, or just change, you know, draft everything that you're drafting is based off of what Peyton Manning is going to do. I think that's what the Colts did. And is that right? I don't know, because they ignored the defense for a long time, and that hurt those Colts teams. But I agree 100%. And another player that comes to mind when it comes to that is like Ben Roethlisberger. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if he was ready to step into the NFL like maybe a Phillip Rivers was or Eli Manning was, but he went into the perfect situation in Pittsburgh. You know, he didn't have to do much. And again, I agree. And you'll see some other players like a David Carr or something like that going to Houston. He was the first pick, but that team was a mess. You know what I mean? And he really, I don't know. I think he was going to be a better player than what he was, but I just think he was one of those quarterbacks who was shell-shocked by being smacked around so much.
Yeah. No, and I think David Carr is a great example you bring up too. And all this really leads to the going into, you know, the draft. And, you know, they have great – you can see him. It's on ESPN Plus. It's also on YouTube. Those NFL Network does those Caught in the Draft specials, those, like, little hour-long documentaries. And they did the 2004 draft. And it's odd, you know, watching it this week again and revisiting 2004. just like you could feel almost between the other players who were invited to New York for the draft and then Eli, like there was kind of like a little bit of like separation where like they were kind of like, he's not one of us because of what he did. And Eli kind of just trying to be, you know, cordial, and he was, and they're all like, you know, you see Robert Gallery and Big Ben and these guys kind of cracking jokes on him. And it's, you know, you got to tell it's in fun, but it's also in like, yeah, you kind of being a prima donna right now. And Eli's kind of like laughing like, ha ha ha. But also you kind of feel, I'm ready to get out of here. I'm kind of done with this stuff. Like, let me just get to the football field. Let me get going. But I'm tired of this.
And he has that personality. I just think, I mean, you look at him now and, you know, now he's on social media and he seems like he's kind of a funny guy, like a dry humor. But even in the draft picture, which is infamous, like his face and like the families, like they're just not happy. Like that, you know what I mean? It was just a weird look. For being the first pick and having your dreams come true, man, like they just look like they did not want to be there. And I would say not only Eli, but the whole family.
No. And I think it's interesting because we go into it and the Chargers know Eli does not want to play for them and he will hold out. He even threatened going with, this is something I kind of found out recently with the research this week. I didn't know he had threatened going to law school. Instead, I didn't know that was part of Eli. I didn't know he had the lawyer.
I'm not hiring him as my lawyer. I'll tell you that.
I'm not either. That's why I was like, oh, I didn't really. Granted, I don't know Eli's GPA and stuff from Ole Miss, but he didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's a smart guy, but I didn't get that feeling like he wanted to continue.
Yeah, unless David Tyree's in the courtroom, then I don't want him in there.
I gotta agree with that 100%. So it's just, we see this epic trade, and it's funny to me because this really, it's about the Chargers to me because they're the ones who really had the eye for Philip Rivers. Ernie Accorsi's the GM of the Giants at the time, and he had it, like I said earlier, Big Ben was his number two guy. And, you know, if Manning sticks with the Chargers, it's not – Rivers is not the fourth pick of the draft. It would have been Roethlisberger.
Yeah, and Ernie Accorsi was obviously involved in that Elway thing. So it's funny, you know, him being on the other side of it this time, you know, because you know, you mentioned that 30 for 30, and he was, you know, and he was in there a lot, and he was a new GM and having to deal with that Elway situation. So it to me, it was funny that he was on the other end of the spectrum with this draft. Yeah.
And it's kind of a chess play of, between A.J. Smith for the Chargers, the GM, Ernie Accorsi, the GM for the Giants, and Ernie Accorsi said he was not going to call first. He was not going to make that move first. A.J. Smith wound up doing it, and it's odd to me, Jose, but it's kind of cool because a lot of times these stories have a sad kind of like someone did well, someone was a bust, and all that, but it really, you've got to say, it worked out well for everybody. All three of these guys, it worked out. You couldn't ask for a better
situation.
No,
I agree.
Really.
It worked out actually kind of perfect for each individual. I felt like Eli was able, out of the three, he was the only one that was going to be able to handle New York. You know, and again, I will get into this a little more when we, you know, talk a little more about these three quarterbacks. But I feel like, out of the three, he was going to be the only – well, I didn't know that at the time, but looking back, he was going to be the only one that was going to handle the media in New York. And it's not like he was just this media-savvy individual. It was just that he didn't say much, you know, and these other two guys were not like that, you know, especially Philip Rivers. I don't know. Philip Rivers, to me, looks – from the outside looking in, I'm not – we're nowhere near San Diego, right? And – but he looks like a kind of like a hothead a little bit. And, you know, I don't know if he handles the New York media the way Eli Manning was able to kind of just keep him away with like that quiet, all shucks kind of, you know, like personality. And, you know, Big Ben, I don't know. I think I look at that the same way. And plus, if you want to add everything that happened early on in his career, I think that New York media would have had a feeding frenzy with him.
Yeah. And honestly, something stayed with him. You know, he's talked recently about some struggles, which is, it's cool that he's working through them. And we, you know, I commend him on his honesty, but I do think that wouldn't have been a good match for him in New York, even though, and that's why I think this draft's interesting, because I don't think any team should do it over and switch it again, looking back. When it comes to the quarterbacks of Eli, Big Ben, and Phil, I think Eli, to me, is the one, and I honestly think all three will get into the Hall of Fame. I believe only one should get into the Hall of Fame.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think only one should, and I think Eli has been the worst of the three, but I do believe, no one would have handled the situation, because you look at it, New York was struggling. They had a tough, Tom Coughlin was, when Eli comes in, Tom Coughlin has that discipline. He has success in Jacksonville, but he's coming in being a hard ass, and he's clashing with Strahan, he's clashing with Tiki, and, a lot of stuff's going on there. Eli's kind of looking shell-shocked. Let's be real, Strahan, you got Tiki, you got Shockey, talented guys, OCU Miura, but big personalities and big names in the New York media with that classic franchise. And I do think, Eli's the guy who would have been okay when Strahan or, Tiki said, hey, just shut up and listen. Eli's the only one who would have just done that. I think I can see it now. Young Big Ben or young Phil with a Strahan, and how tough that defense was and those guys. And if they're throwing all those picks like Eli and then the bickering in the
media, I agree 100%. And, again, Eli was the only one that, in my opinion as well, that was able to take a back seat to those defenses. Like these quarterbacks, say what it is. Sometimes they can, once they start playing, playing well, they start really feeling themselves. And, the media, it's all about the quarterback, right? These Giants teams at this era, it was about that defense, and I don't know, again, how well Phillip Rivers would have been able to handle that. You know what I mean? And then playing for Tom Coughlin, I don't think Phillip Rivers would have been able to handle that, and because again, to me, looking, he looks like, he's on the sidelines, he's constantly yelling. And I'm not saying he's a bad teammate, but it's just, he has that ultra competitor, inside of him, obviously. And, going against those defenses and having to go back and forth with that, it would have been tough. I feel like Eli was the perfect fit for that team. He was talented enough to get him to, obviously the two Super Bowls, but, he was the perfect personality for that team. I'll say it that way. And out of the three, and I know me and you talked about this, off the air, he was probably I would rank him number three in this order, but if it's one playoff game, he's my starter out of the three.
One playoff game, I would say he's my number two. And I get this debate with a lot of people about Eli's clutch fact. And I'm not saying he's not clutch. I think it's gotten over.
Yeah, a little bit. I'll say that too. Yeah, I agree with that.
I look at two games that really showed Eli's toughness to me. And it's both those Super Bowl runs, but it's the 07 championship game in Green Bay was great. And then the 2011 championship game at, San Fran, where he's getting knocked around crazy. Even though I think if you put anyone in other than Alex Smith, the Niners win that game. Because the Niners D was shutting down Eli and knocking him all over the place. And so, but Eli hung in there and made clutch throws when he needed to. But I look at those two games, honestly, in my opinion, for Eli. And I think he definitely stepped up when he needed to. But as much as everything with Big Ben, he And it's weird because early on, he kind of had the whole, I think Philip had that too. They had early success, but they're carried by some great talent around them. But Big Ben, to me, showed he was the guy with sometimes not have – he's had – all of them have had some skill position guys, and especially Eli and Ben have had defenses. But I kind of saw with Big Ben, him really leading a team. And there's a difference from riding it. You know, me and an old friend, we always say, you know, when it comes to sports, you a tractor or you the trailer? And so far – for a winning Super Bowl winning team, the only one who's been a tractor ever to me was Big Ben. And Eli was a trailer. Philip, when he has been the tractor, hasn't gotten the job done. And that's not totally his fault. Some years the Chargers did not have the talent, but the only guy who's gotten it done, and Ben did it as both a trailer and a tractor. And that to me has been Roethlisberger.
Yeah, he's definitely been a trailer, though. I would say that. Now, I'm going to preface this by saying, Ben Roethlisberger is probably my least favorite player in the NFL and has been for a very long time. Because, again, some of it is due to, like, the earlier stuff, right? Like, again, we'll get into that. But I think a big part of it is due to that. But also, like, he gets credit for, you know, these Super Bowl wins. And, you know, he was playing in the game, rightfully so. He deserves credit, right? He was the quarterback of the team that won a Super Bowl. You got to give him those props. But that first Super Bowl, not only was he not the trailer, he wasn't even in the fucking farm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that was the worst quarterback performance I've ever seen in a Super Bowl. Well, in that game, yeah. But
oh, in that game,
I think I got to take my emotion out of this one. But you know, I felt like. Again, you want to talk about perfect, like position or perfect place for he was. That was the perfect place for him, like, because that offense was not only also not geared around him. You know what I mean? Like, it was more about the running game, and he had to make a couple throws a game. He would break a couple runs, get a couple first downs. I have a tough time looking at him those first 2 years, 3 years as, you know, a tractor. I definitely don't look at him that way.
No, and that's why I said he won both. He won as a trailer and he won as a tractor. The first Super Bowl, you know, the one that Bill Cowher won, definitely was a trailer. But granted, you know, Tommy Maddox was not getting that job done either, and he had been the comeback player of the year. And they look, but I don't think they're going to go to the Super Bowl with Tommy Maddox. So I give Ben credit, you know, there. Now he played bad in the Super Bowl, and I think. Only for a winning Super Bowl quarterback, Peyton Manning, you know, Super Bowl 50 is probably the only one I can think who's rivals how, you know, Ben did not do anything in that
it
game.
It was also but, raining in that Colts game.
No, I mean.
Okay.
I meant the Broncos one.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they beat Cam and the Panthers. I look at it that way for that one. But it's more of a. I will say I have to give Ben that, but it's weird. I don't think, I guess there's not a big difference between the three of them. Like I'm not sure.
Yeah. There's not a big gap.
Yeah, he's definitely what I look. Yeah. I'll say why, because we've talked about it in previous shows. You have to be considered one of the best for you to be a Hall of Fame. Big Ben has had a run of, you threw his name out there. He's had times as a top five quarterback in this league to me, where you're like top five, you throw Big Ben in there. And I don't, to me, I look at it, you have to be top five in your position or top, you know, top five player, because, you know, we can go 5-1. A lot of people can reverse it, but you're in the talk of the best at your position for a period of time. Phillip Rivers, to me, I think at times, I never looked at him as a top five guy. I looked at him as a top 10 guy. And Eli, I don't think I ever looked at as a top 10 guy. Not 1 year in his career, I said Eli's a top 10 quarterback in the game. And that's kind of what hurts it for me. I never saw Eli, and he's someone, you know, granted, in today's world, we can watch all the games anyway, but, you know, we're in Philly, you know, New York, we saw a lot of them, play him twice a year, followed his career hard.
No, not at all. Not at all. But I
top 10 quarterback.
Top 10, definitely Phillip Rivers. And I would say some years I looked at Phillip Rivers maybe as a top 5 quarterback. It would be low in that top 5, like 5. You know what I mean? But he's had his years. Yeah, yeah. And if you want to look, so, you know, we're on this topic. So I want to, like, you know me with the stats. So let's just look at them three.
Go ahead.
Right? You know, all, like, together in regards to, like, stats. So, you know, if you want to look at, like, career records, right, Roethlisberger has the edge there. But he also, in my opinion, had the better teams out of these three for a longer period of time. So you look at, and this is crazy, like, career records, Eli Manning's 117 and 117. Like, I think that says a lot. Rivers is 123. Mm-hmm. And 101, and then Big Ben is 144 and 71 with a tie. But that's huge. He has a great record there. So if you want to look at, these are regular season stats. Now, I don't know, with these three, that's, we have to point that out. That's very important. So, you know, passing yards, Manning's at 57,023 yards, Rivers 59,271 yards, and then Roethlisberger's at 545. So, yeah. And I'm surprised Roethlisberger's that close, to be honest, to Rivers. But touchdowns, Rivers has them by like 34, 397 to 363. Interceptions, Rivers is at 198, Big Ben at 191. Eli Manning's at 244 interceptions and 366 touchdowns. So, you know, stat-wise, I think Rivers got them. Got the three of them. Accolades, Rivers has them again. Manning has 4 Pro Bowls. Rivers has 8. 2013 Comeback Player of the Year. Big Ben, 6-time Pro Bowler. 2004 Offensive Rookie of the Year. But then, like, the difference is, like, the second season, as they say. You know, and then Manning has 2 Super Bowls, obviously. 6 postseason wins. 8-4 record. 2 Super Bowl MVPs. And Rivers has no titles, 6 postseason appearances, 5-6 record. Big Ben, 2 Super Bowls, 13-8 playoff record. So I think that's where the separation comes, if there's any.
Yeah. And to me, the separation comes, you're right. I think all of them had great talent that first part of their, like, those first 5 years of that career.
Yeah.
A lot of talent on both sides of the ball. Had great coaches. Great organizations, you know. I think, to me, the thing is, and definitely this is where I knock Eli. I look at it, if you're the leader, you're the quarterback, you're going to have times where, you know, okay, especially if you're the quarterback for a long period of time, things, you may go through some transitions. Eli, to me, never made the Giants or the people around him better. I always felt like if he had a weapon, you know, that kind of carried him. And made Eli look better, but he never made, you know, the team around him better. Phillip, I felt like it was up in the air. It's kind of like the Carson Wentz thing where he does, you know, you look at it like, oh, he's kind of struggling with some talent. You know, Phillip did always have, you know, he had
Hall of Fame running back behind him. Time.
But it's like, yeah, at first, LT did kind of go down, I'd say, quickly. Like, he had a couple years with him, and he had LT's greatest year, you know, the benefit factor of that. But LT kind of did go down, but Phillip would make plays with less talent once it became really his team and not LT's team, but then also make the mistakes too. And it's kind of like that Carson Wentz thing where you kind of are torn because you see that he's making these guys, he's keeping them in the game, but then he's making mistakes that are, you can't defend. And it's like, wait a minute, why are you trying to force this? Or why are you holding on to the ball too long? Or why are you throwing it into triple coverage and doing it like
and Phillip out of the three, too. Wanted to jump in real quick, had that, and I hate this term in football, that gunslinger mentality. Like, I fucking hate that term. But out of the three, he had that.
Yeah. I agree. And I think, to me, Big Ben kind of had it, but, and this is the thing, off the field, and this is where I take my bias out of it. Off the field, I'm with you. I've not been a fan of Ben. Done a lot of things off the field that are, haven't been great. And a lot of the things you heard about Ben throughout his career, he wasn't a really nice guy to people. I hear that he's improved on that as he's gotten older. But on the field, I have grown for a long time to love watching Big Ben, because to me, he kind of has that John Wayne kind of like gunslinger thing, but doesn't turn it over like a Phillip Rivers. But he's this big core, He's got three guys hanging on him, and he just kind of shreds them and then makes a big clutch throw. Like, I think Big Ben excelled in that. And there was a long time where the Steelers did not, outside of like Marquise Pouncey, didn't have a really good offensive line. And Ben got hit a lot and still was leading the Steelers, deep into the playoffs. And, even to that Super Bowl appearance against the Packers, Ben led them, pretty well down there as well. So that's where, to me, the separation comes through. The thing is, I don't know if Ben, he goes to New York. I kind of don't know if he survived.
Yeah, because I give Ben credit is I feel like throughout their careers, he's the one that has improved the most. Like, and I feel like, his career is really up and down. And I don't mean like performance wise. I just mean like the type of player he was. At first, he was like that system quarterback, no turnovers, throwing the ball like 15 to 18 times a game, making a couple big plays with his legs. And then, that Pittsburgh offense kind of changed into, they're throwing the ball 45 times a game, and he was having monster years doing that. And then again, they go back to the run, and, now they got, at one point Le'Veon and all these guys, and he's spreading the ball around. And then now, again, they're like back to the running game, and then they're changing it up again, and now they're throwing 40 times again. So I feel like out of the three, I'll give him that credit. I feel like out of the three, he's improved the most. Like, I just – because, again, I wanted to – like I mentioned earlier, like, I felt like before he was not – like, he was just a system quarterback for those first couple of years, and then he just evolved. And he also had – and you mentioned great coaches. Like, he's had the great head coach, but he's also had some really good offensive coordinators. And, I feel like you can see that in his play, how it just progressed and continued to get better and better and better.
Yeah, and – I do have to agree with that, and I do just think Big Ben has been the best of them. I think everyone fit right. I think being with Pittsburgh and that great front, the Rooneys, believing in him and how well they do with picking those coaches and coaching staffs was definitely huge. But I think it was huge for all three of these guys. All three of them, you can say, well, we know for a fact Big Ben his first 3 years had Bill Cowher is a Hall of Famer. Schottenheimer, people say, should be in the Hall of Fame. Tom Coughlin, people are looking at saying he should be going to the Hall of Fame one day. So they've all been a benefactor of great coaching. And so got to give them that. But I do just think, to your point, Big Ben has gotten better. He's improved. And you see that where kind of like, I think Russell Wilson has a chance to be better than Big Ben, But that says something when, you're that conservative, don't make a mistake quarterback, but then you evolve and you show that it is your team. And none of those other guys ever stepped up to me and showed me that it was their team. And I'll also say this, outside, I think Antonio Brown's a future Hall of Famer unless they want to knock him for off the field stuff, but Antonio Brown should be a Hall of Famer in my opinion. You see, Santonio Holmes wasn't nothing once he left Pittsburgh. Mike Wallace, a lot of these guys weren't really much either. So I think that to me shows like he made guys better. Where I feel like in other places, OBJ to me, carried. If Eli didn't have OBJ for these last few years, Eli would have been even worse. He would have been worse. So I think, and that to me was totally him being carried, by the receiver, not him making OBJ better. So I just feel that was a constant in what was going on for, and fitting him with Phillip. I feel like he was made by LT and made by, that defense at first. And then Antonio Gates helped him out. And then he was chucking the ball around a lot and getting big numbers, but he was making a lot of dumb mistakes. And cost, you know, look at it also, I'll say this, the Chargers, a lot of those years, were losing games.
Yeah.
They're not getting blown out in that when Phillip Rivers is the man, they're losing by 3 points, 7 points. You know, they're 6-10, and 8 of their losses are 7 points and less. That says something to me. If you're that quarterback, I'm sorry. I expect you, if you're losing by 6 points, 7 points or less.
Yeah, there's a couple plays there in that game that you had to make and you didn't make. And what's funny that you say that is he's playing with the Colts now, obviously. It's the same thing. Like, you look at their losses, it's like by like 7 points or less.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great point. I like that. And also, some of those playoff games that Phillip Rivers lost, they were favored in those games. They were home games. I remember they lost in Patriots. Now, I know it's the Patriots, and so I can kind of give them a pass on that. But you're home, 14-2. Like, you should not lose that game, and they did. And so that, to me, says a lot, too, because these other quarterbacks, you know, Big Ben wasn't losing, you know, too many games at home, you know, in the playoffs. And Eli, you know, again, we going back to the track record, like, he does have a decent playoff track record, so. Out of the three, if I'm having a playoff game, he's the last guy I want to start, which is Phillip Rivers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think and we'll redraft, but I kind of wanted to look at, you know, before we get into, you know, we start doing 1 through 10, some other storylines looking back on this draft. You know, we have to look at, and we kind of talked about it in our episode about the Miami, Florida State, and what was going on there.
Ooh,
but,
yeah.
Jose, the U, them Canes, 6 first-round draft picks.
Yeah, not only Miami. You look at a team like, you know, Ohio State, right? Set an NFL record for having 14 players drafted in this draft. So, you know, a couple of these colleges were really standing out. But, yeah, that Hurricane – That Hurricane run was amazing. And we talked about it, like you said, if you want to check the archives, when we talked about the Miami versus Florida State rivalry. And, you know, this early 2000s to 2005, like this Hurricane first round run was something else to see, man. And, you know, and this one here, again, kind of just capped it all off with that. I think it was, like you said, 6 in the first round, which is amazing.
And, you know, really should have won back-to-back, but Ohio State stole the title from them. You know, so kudos, you know, and I mean stole. But, you know, Ohio State, they the late, great Will Smith came out of that draft, so definitely rest in peace to him. Everybody else.
Chris Gamble should have been a better player. Jenkins, he had a couple decent seasons.
You know, anyway. Panthers,
so.
Yeah.
Which is
Ohio
going
State
away.
Stink on him. It just, he couldn't shake it. But. But I'll say this, there's a lot of stuff going on with, you know, the Canes, and you look at it, there's some big names. If honestly, the one, you know, Vince Wilfork, I think Wilfork should be a Hall of Fame player, but then I look at tragedy, and they were kind of back and forth, the Redskins at the time, you know, with the 5th pick between, you know, 2 Canes with Sean Taylor and Kellen Winslow.
I thought they were going Winslow with that draft pick. And because I know that was a name that was, like you said, that was being floated around with Washington. But, you know, they obviously didn't go wrong, right, with Sean Taylor, rest in peace. And but I was a huge Kellen Winslow fan. Like, I thought he was going to revolutionize that tight end position. And he had a couple of really good seasons, but that was another storyline coming into this year. Like, you know, he had the infamous "I'm a soldier," like, you know, comment, which, to be honest, I think was overblown. I mean, to be perfectly honest, because like, when you grow up in certain areas, that, like, that statement is not, like, You're not. It's just. I thought it was overblown. I'll just say it like that.
I'll say this because I'm with you. I know. You know. Yeah. That's not the statement doesn't bother me because you hear it all the time.
It just means you're certain tough. Areas like that's, certain people, that's pretty much
you
what
know
it
that
means.
Statement. Right.
Yeah, especially at that point.
And it was known, honestly, even at that point, It wasn't like underground kind of like slang, like, oh, who, what? That was very known. And honestly, I remember at that point thinking how ridiculous to harp on that comment, because I remember watching, I love The Sopranos, but Tony Soprano, you know, in Dr. Melfi's office in one episode talking about, you know, guys dying. And he's like, what? We're soldiers. That's what that comes with it. And like, no, I mean, it's think then, you know, and he's in the mob, you know, his character, it's not real, it's character, but he's in the mob. No one was like, he said that they were soldiers. You heard that. It was whatever. But then when Kellen Winslow says it, it's a thing. Now, what I will say, they overblew what he said. How he said it, though, was kind of alarming in a way. And granted, we have revisionist history and we know what's happened with him throughout his career and even very recently. That's kind of what stuck out to me, is he kind of looked like
he was going off.
Yeah. Like he didn't look.
He was letting you know.
Like when you watch that clip. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like, is everyone home? You know, no offense. That's kind of what
he
didn't
have to go off
like
that.
Was
like,
that's where I'm like, oh, like.
And he did, and he made that statement.
Right.
Even if you look in his Wikipedia, it's like, you know, it says the comment, you know, I'm a soldier, and he was not in the military. Like, no shit, that's not what he's saying. Like, it's something different.
Yeah. No, that's what bothers me. The statement wasn't bad.
Yeah,
I kind of looked at it like, he said it crazy, and he looked crazy, and it's after the, and now granted, you know, you still have emotions after the game, but it was after the game what he looked like. It's like, I think you need another hour or two before you
go
talk
to the
media or something. Like, you need some time. Yeah, yeah. Like, he's like, boy, he hadn't calmed down. And so that's where I had it. But, yeah, it's man, I look at it.
Yeah.
Great move by Joe Gibbs, I think, in going with Sean Taylor. And to me, this draft is way more fascinating, I'll be honest, than I thought. And there's some great what ifs, but there's obviously none.
Yeah, that was I had
Sean
that.
Taylor,
you know,
opinion.
He's obviously on my list. You know, the top 10. But yeah, Hall of Fame potential. Like he was an amazing talent. He was like those freakish athletes that you see. Like you get that with like, you know, like a Randy Moss or Calvin Johnson, you know, or, you know, like some of these guys are like, you're like, wow. Like, you know what I mean? Like they're in the NFL and they're doing things like that. And he was one of them. Sean Taylor was one of them. And it's just like, you know, like you would watch him play and he would just stand out like head and shoulders above everybody, man. And it was just, again, it was like, he was like fast. He was huge. He was big, you know, for safety. He will run you over or he can take it to the house for 80 yards. Like, you know, he was just one of those amazing athletes that we were like robbed out of, you know what I mean? And it's a shame.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'll be honest. It's the one football life.
Yeah.
I watched it once and I can't watch it again. I haven't watched it. I whether on YouTube or on TV, I see it and I'm like, people are like, oh, that was a great, I'm like, yeah, it's a great one, but I can't watch that because it is just, and this is from, we're two Eagle fans, and I hated the Redskins, you know, and still do, but like, just because we, you know, saw him throughout at Miami, saw the, because you're right, that's a great, he had that ability,
yeah,
the way we talk about Calvin and Randy on, they're offensive guys, but on the defensive, to me, he's like a mix of like Patrick, you know, Peterson and Cam Chancellor. Like, you throw him in the one, like, that ball-hawking ability, like a Peterson, but that big hit, kind of freakish, big size, like Cam, you have in one guy with Sean Taylor. And I do believe, unless he would have gotten some
and
crazy
if you
injury,
can,
yeah, he would have been
if you
ask
me how to, if I can create a safety, it would be Sean Taylor. Like, easily. Like, easily. And I remember when Washington picked him, and I was like, man, like, we got to deal with this stud, man, for the next 8 to 10 years. Like, this is going to suck.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And I don't say that a lot of, you know, with divisional teams, because, you know, I don't even want to give them credit. Even like, you know, people were like, certain years, the Giants had a good draft with the Cow. And I'm like, yeah, then, you know, shut up. They had one good pick. Yeah, that's the bias in me. I'm like, we'll see. They're going to screw it up. that was the one time I remember you referenced it in a previous episode, when like that football life, when Phil Simms, when the Eagles drafted Jerome Brown and our lives are going to change. I felt that way when the Redskins took Sean Taylor. I'm like, our lives as Eagles fans are going to change seeing this dude twice a year. And it would happen. I really feel that lure of the U, and I'm going off the top of my head, maybe there's someone else. He's the last guy that represents that kind of, you know, they've had great players after him. I'm not saying that, but he had that U swag.
Yeah.
Kind of like bordering on the edge of like troublemaker, but it's like still fun, but he's hard hitting. He brings a toughness, like, I don't give a damn attitude.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm trying to think back, but I
was Sean Taylor.
That might be a good point. Yeah, because I can't remember anyone else after the 04. Because that's when, right after this, this is what kind of like they took that nosedive. But yeah, that's the guy, man. Again, yeah. I would have loved to have seen his career pan out.
And I'll say this, one thing I remember, and it stuck with me. Because I only watched that football life one time, but Sean Taylor had that bad ass, and he made me laugh a lot of times too, because he just didn't care, and you also kind of saw like a he was naive to it, which I think I kind of liked in a way, because he was just about playing football, like, and he was just about being him. He wasn't trying to be a brand or an image kind of a thing. But you know, the Redskins draft Chris Cooley, which, you know, smart by them, honestly, you know, not taking Kellen, and you get a tight end who probably had just as good of a career as Kellen, not better anyway, much later. So kudos to the Redskins on that. But you look at Chris Cooley told that story.
Yeah.
You know, the rookies go to that symposium for like 3 or 4 days, and you got to stay at the hotel on this like campus, and you get talked to about different issues and how to balance your money and staying away from, you know, certain things. And I laugh because Chris Cooley's like, he's like, I'm sitting in like the front row, and Sean's behind me, he taps me, and like the guy's talking about, you know, saving your money the first day. And Sean Taylor just whispered, like, what is this? And Chris Cooley's like, I just looked at him and I was like, it's like, you know, the rookie symposium, you know, man, that's why you're here. That's why we're all here. And then he's like, Sean Taylor like sat back and then tapped him again and goes, no, what is this? Like, what are we doing here? He's like, what? And he's like, Sean said, I can't stay here. I gotta go.
Yeah,
and like Sean Taylor like snuck out and like left the campus like the next day, and they had like, I remember this guy the next morning was like, "You are here for a reason. We had someone leave in the middle of the night. Do not leave." And I was just dying. I'm like, Sean Taylor just didn't know, but didn't care either. He was just like, "I gotta get out of here." He's like, "Who are these dudes talking to me about my money? I gotta go." So I always, Sean Taylor just had it, and that's we talk about on the field, but even off the field, Sean Taylor had that swag.
Yeah, there are certain players, you know, I just look at from, me, you know, from like from afar, and I just, man, like, I wish this dude was on my team. Like, he would be absolutely my favorite player if he was, you know, on the Eagles or whatever other team I'm thinking about. And he's one of those guys. Ed Reed was another one. I was a huge Ed Reed. I'm a big defensive back guy, you know what I mean? And so it some of these, definitely those two, but Sean Taylor was definitely up there. Yeah.
No, and I think he would have rivaled B-Dawg and Polamalu and Ed Reed for sure. Some of the great what ifs to me, obviously he's the greatest, but I got to be honest, to me, I'm looking at, it's on a personal level, but from Sean Andrews, you know, we took him. And just what could have been, you know, and how dominant early on. I think people forget how dominant he was as a guard early on with the Eagles, and for a couple years was definitely maybe in running for the best guard in football, until, you know, obviously he battled the mental health issues and certain things.
Yep.
But I kind of look at him, you know, Jose. I look at Bob Sanders too, as another what if, and his career, you know, he has.
Yeah, he was one of those like missiles,
man,
from that secondary.
Well.
Like, if a running back clears a hole, you better watch out, because he was such a physical safety, but he was also one of those like sideline to sideline guys. Like, you know, you don't get that a lot. Like, you know, we mentioned Sean Taylor; he was definitely one of them. But it's either at this era, like, you were either like a hard hitting safety or somebody who can just, you know, pass coverage, and you were really good at that. You really didn't get that combination too often. You know, Bob Sanders was that combination. Like, he was definitely super physical. I think he was more of a physical guy than a cover guy, but he can do both. And I that was another safety I really enjoyed watching. But again, he was one of those guys who was often injured due to the fact the way he played, you know. So that was another what if for me. And you mentioned Sean Andrews. He didn't crack my top 10, but he was very close. And again, this was not like a homer pick or nothing. Like, he was a dominant player. You know what I mean? Like, he was injured early, but once he came back from that first year, man, he was a dominant guard. You know what I mean? And that was when obviously he, you know, when he stopped playing, that was a big issue for the Eagles, right? Like, that was a big hole they had to fill. And because it was, you know, kind of unexpected. And they had just signed him. He signed his big deal. Like, he was the future of that offensive line, man. And, you know, that was a tough one. Cause then you look at it, like, what he was battling. Again, you mentioned, like, the mental health, like, man, that's gotta be tough. Like, they, you know, they have a player now who's battling that as well. And Barrett Brooks. And so it's tough. We don't know what these guys go through, man. And I just, I was looking back at this draft, and all I just kept singing in my head was that Michael Phelps song that he came out with. And I was just like, man, like, good personality. Yeah. Like, it was just sad to see what happened with that.
Yeah, yeah. I think, honestly, he could have taken this city over by storm with that. Like you said, how tough he was on the field, but very likely he always had that. I remember seeing him in like, you know, coming in college and then people interviewing. I was so pumped. You know me. You are a DB guy. I'm an O-line guy. So when they got him, and even that game, you know, that 04 season, he gets hurt the first game. He's dominating the Giants in that first game.
He was crying. He was crying. You know, being carted off. Broken. Oh, man, that was tough.
And it was heartbreaking. And I say this. I'm an offensive line guy, but it's getting more publicity now than I feel like for, like, the common fan than, like, it ever has been. But I still feel like a lot of people don't watch and, you know, can see an individual offensive lineman and are like, whoa, like, he jumps out at the screen to him. And as a guy who's a fan of it, there's not, to me, a lot of guys who I'm like, yeah, I can point to them and their highlight reel. Everyone's going to be like, wow. Sean Andrews was doing that for a time. And, I remember Bill Belichick saying, you know, after that Sunday night game with A.J. Feely and the Eagles almost went into Foxborough and beat him. Bill Belichick's like, that's the best guard we faced all year. Yeah. This guy's phenomenal. And I was proud to hear that, you know, from Bill Belichick talking about that. And he's someone, you know, he's not a bust in my mind at all. Like, I call him still one of Andy's better.
Yeah, and that just goes back to what we talked about in that Andy Reid episode.
Sean Andrews.
That we had, is that he had an eye for that talent, for that offensive line talent. He definitely, you know, he had a couple misses, but he had an eye. He has an eye for that, you know, offensive line, defensive line talent, Andy Reid. I'll give him credit for that.
Yeah, and so, Jose, I wanted to ask you, you know, we talked about the big three with those quarterbacks, and that's obviously for everyone, the headline to the 04 draft, but what are some other, like, either things that stuck out for you?
This one player, up, you know, for me, to me, he's the best player in this draft, but that does not get talked about in this year. And if it was any other year, I think he would be the first name that people mention, which for me would be Larry Fitzgerald. I think he's the best player in this draft. I think he had the best career out of anybody in this draft. But, like, such a – not only, like, a Hall of Fame – because he's the first ballot Hall of Famer, but not only, like, a Hall of Fame talent, but just, like, a good dude, right? Like, you see all the stuff that, you know, he does off the field, and a lot of these guys do that too, man. NFL Man of the Year award winner, it's – he just seems like, and this is a guy who, again, if he would have played on the Eagles or any other team, I think would have, and if he would have played somewhere else, you know, if he plays in New York for 10 years, like, he's going to be considered as one of the best wide receivers ever, you know, and people still consider him that, but I just feel like if he played in the bigger market, people would be all over Larry Fitzgerald. And So I just, and even like the backstory of him, you know, the ball boy Minnesota was always like put out there, and how guys like Chris Carter and Randy Moss talk about him. It's just, you know, and in Pitt, he was really good in Pitt, like, but what he turned out to be, man, was obviously to me one of the best wide receivers ever. But not that he doesn't get talked about, but when people talk about this draft, his name does not come up.
No, it doesn't. I agree. And, you know, we last year we had the NFL 100th anniversary, and there's one guy from the 04 draft who's on that team. That's Larry Fitzgerald, you know. And I also, the youngest guy, I think, you know, look at it, him and Devin, if you look at special teams with Devin Hester, but, you know, the two youngest guys on that all 100 team were, you know, Hester and then Fitzgerald, and Hester made it as a kick returner. You're absolutely right. Hands down, the by far the best player in this draft, the best career, Larry Fitz. And I look at, like, the all 100 team, it's hard for me to find someone. He did all this where I look at it, he really had two quarterbacks who played well, with Kurt Warner, who is a Hall of Famer, but got him at the back end, kind of helped revitalize him. And then Carson Palmer, he had, like, 3 years with Kurt Warner, and then really, like, what, two, maybe three with Carson Palmer, and then just doing what he did, staying in Arizona with just awful quarterback play. And to me, I look at it – now, I'm not saying he's better than Rice or Moss, but those guys had great quarterbacks, you know, throughout their career. Even I look at, like, Steve Largent. Steve Largent had a more steady quarterback play than what Larry Fitzgerald had. There's no other receiver on that, like, top 100 team who really had the inconsistency at the QB position like Larry Fitz. So imagine if he had even – not even a Hall of Famer like what Rice and Moss had, but just
a steady it's pro insane. And then you look at his numbers when Kurt Warner was, like, playing well in Arizona, they're out of this world. Like, you know what I mean? And it's just like, and he was unstoppable. And in playoff games, in big games, he stepped up and had huge games. You know, I remember the game against the Eagles. I remember that, you know, the Super Bowl play against Pittsburgh when he caught the slant and took it to the house. Like he was just a quiet, great player. And, you know, he wasn't this diva wide receiver that, you know, was definitely going on in the NFL at this point in time, and it had just gotten worse and worse and worse. But, you know, he was not that guy. And I think that time that also plays a factor in why people don't talk about him. But, you know, I just think he's just one of those, you know, just shows up every day, you know, and is going to play hard for you. But also, like those, we talked about, like, those quarterback, like, those tangibles, like, what they have. Like, he has it all, too. Size, he had the speed, he had definitely had the hands. He can go up and get the ball. Like, he can catch him in traffic, and he can, again, catch a slant and take it to the house. Like, this, he's one of those wide receivers that it's, like, one of those molds. Again, we talked about Sean Taylor, but a wide receiver mold. He's got a lot of those, you know, those attributes that you're looking for in a wide receiver, for sure.
No, absolutely. I agree. And a couple other just storylines that I want to, you know, throw out is I look at – first I got to talk about – and thank goodness we talked about, you know, the Redskins with Sean Taylor. The fact that Dallas, everyone thought, and Steven Jackson thought, he's going to Dallas. And then thank goodness for Jerry Jones, you know, Jerry being Jerry. And trading back, and he, you know, they wanted more draft picks. So I get the logic, but then you see that they took a running back with Julius Jones in that draft. And it's like, man, I'm thankful that Jerry Jones, you could talk about as an owner, great, as a GM, awful, because, man, if he would have taken Steven Jackson, that would have been, you know, the Eagles had to see him twice a year. That would have been a problem. Steven Jackson got banged up and didn't have as long as a career, but for a while, talk about a freak athlete and a monster, and could do it, you know, come out the backfield and also run up the middle. Steven Jackson was a problem, and I just laugh at, you know, the Cowboys once again. Who knows what could have been with that team? Yeah. They had Steven Jackson in the backfield, especially when Romo started, you know, emerging for them, And they had him throwing the ball too much. If he had a Steven Jackson in the backfield, that they
definitely
could have been
a big
Super
whiff.
Bowl team,
and,
in my opinion.
Yeah, that's
him.
A name that's definitely going miss. To be talked about in my top 10 for sure. But yeah, that these are the misses that you're so glad that other organizations make, especially that are in your division they're in your team's division. Because, man, like you get to see those guys, and it's just like, man, like these guys are. He had a good run there of, you know, a top five running back in the league for sure. I think he's the Rams' all time leading rusher. And if you think about the running backs that they had, like that says a lot right there.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I also want to throw out Chris Snee, and I know it's like, huh? But I throw that out. Give props to the O-line, but it's interesting that he gets drafted second round by the Giants.
Yeah.
Tom Coughlin's the new head coach. Tom Coughlin is also his father-in-law. And I found it interesting because I do remember, you know, you don't hear it now because Christie had a very good career for a while, was one of the better guards in the game. But he was projected as a fourth-round guy, and Tom Coughlin mm-hmm. took him in the second round. And people were saying, like, nepotism and all that. And I give credit to how Chris Snee handled it. I give credit to Tom Coughlin by saying, I don't care. And you kind of see, like, we talked about, people look at these, like, intangible kind of things. They try to find it with, like, the measures and at the combine. Tom Coughlin obviously knew the guy personally. And there's nothing wrong with that. Using that and saying, I know him. I know I can coach him. I want this guy here, and it proved.
Yeah, he was a good player for sure. And again, you don't hear about him, and that's good when it comes to offensive linemen. You know, because you know if you don't hear about a guy, that means he's doing his job. Also, like for me, looking at this draft, like I look at one team who really, really helped themselves with this draft, and I would say it's the Arizona Cardinals. You know,
mm-hmm.
because they. I mean, you look at their first three picks. You know,
they
take Fitzgerald again, like we just mentioned. I think is a consensus pick, the best player in this draft, right? And then the second round they take Carlos Dansby, and then in the third round they take Darnell Dockett, which all like three good players, obviously, three players who they built their franchise around, for the next 6 or 7 years, you know what I mean? So I think they had a great draft this year. And I was just kind of looking. I was like, wait, the Cardinals drafted. I was like, wait, who did he get in the third round? I was like, wow. Like, I almost forgot how good of a draft they had this year.
They did, and there were some good players. You know, one great and then two good ones. Dansby is good, and Dockett was good. I thought you were going with the Chargers. Because that, to me, is that I look at the team who really I feel – I think the Cardinals definitely – you
Michael
could say
Turner.
Maybe second. But I feel like the Chargers with, they took Rivers.
Yeah.
And, Michael Turner. You have Nick Hardwick, Igor Olshansky. Even, Kading was a Pro Bowl kicker for them. They took some guys that really kind of set up what the Chargers – who after that, Sean Phillips, really good pass rusher. And wound up doing well for them. And they wound up, after this year, they won 6 straight AFC West titles. And even what they got from that trade with the Giants, the next year, they take Sean Merriman. So, looking back in hindsight, that set up the Chargers. Like I said, 6 straight division titles. You're right. Really should have.
I agree.
I think the Chargers would have smoked the Colts in the 06 championship game. That was their chance to really do it for Marty, but they didn't get the job done. But I agree, that's a good call. Carlos Dansby, I felt
he was really good.
Overhyped at times. Darnell Dockett was very good to me. I liked him a lot.
Yeah. Steel.
So, there's just difference to look at, Jared Allen, fourth rounder, big time steal, and then we talked about it off air, and you had said it, and Wes Welker, and I thought, that's the best undrafted player, one of the best ever, which he is, but I'm like, that's definitely the best in 04. Shame on me, at least, I forgot about another guy who tops him,
and
to me is a future Hall of Famer.
I forgot about Jason Peters. That's a very good point. Yeah, he's definitely going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer for sure. And I forgot about Jason Peters in this draft. Wow.
And to me, I think you can make a case. I think you're right. Fitzgerald's number one.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Jason Peters.
I'm gonna tell you this:
the second best career.
He's not on my top 10, but if he would have been. He would have been in my second player pick.
Hey, you might. Hey, we'll see. Maybe you know we can revamp or something because it's Jason Peters, and now it's different. Even though I don't know, it's weird because he did play tight end. He's like a hybrid like guy. But like he's undrafted, but I'm like, that's obvious. Like you look how big he was at Arkansas. I'm like, put him at tackle. And there's no way he should have been undrafted, but he was. And yeah, that's something when you have two undrafted guys like Welker and Peters in a draft. That's and two undrafted guys could definitely are your top 10 players of
yeah, and Welker
draft.
Added to maybe that Chargers draft. Top five, you know what I mean? Because they signed Welker, right? The Chargers?
They sign him, and then he plays in the first game. He returns five kickoffs.
Not good.
And then good old Marty cuts him the next day.
And kept Tim Dwight.
I'm like, why would you play him so much? Yeah, it kept Tim Dwight. I don't know. You know, everyone has mistakes. I really feel one of Bill Belichick's greatest moves was what he saw in bringing in Wes Welker. Randy Moss was not a surprise to me. We knew the ability he had. To me, it was like he just wasn't happy. But how key Welker was for them for those next however many years. And to me, I think Gronk has surpassed Welker now as Brady's, favorite target and best target he really played with consistently. Because Moss, he really had like, 2 years, maybe a year and a half. I think Moss is the greatest, but Moss, I don't really look at, they had that one great season. But for a while, lethal, that Brady to Welker combination was like the best in the game. And kudos. And I also don't feel like, obviously Tom Brady's the GOAT when it comes to quarterbacks, but I'm not like, Brady just made Welker.
Yeah,
Welker was a big
he changed the game.
That.
He changed. He definitely, receivers. They changed the game. Because I mean, they had to kind of introduce that, and he had to play that. And I feel like they changed the game with that, in my opinion. Like that short, quick passing game, which not only, it helps the slot. I mean, it helps that slot receiver, but it also helps the quarterback, helps the offensive line. Like, it helps these quarterbacks to play for 15 years, as you can see. Like, the one thing about Brady, he doesn't get hit as much. Why? Is because it's like 1, 2, 3, boom, gone. 1, 2, 3, boom, gone. And how can you do that with a guy like Wes Welker who's, running those option routes and just getting wide open left and right, and you can't cover him? And what happened also is you have to change your defense now to that as well. You can't cover him with a linebacker. A safety's not covering him. So what do you got to do? You got to play nickel or something and bring in another, corner. And even another corner is going to have a tough time covering him in space like that. So it was a game changer for the Patriots.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I guess I think one of Bill Belichick's like sneaky like best moves he's done in his time with the Patriots was bringing in Welker, and you could tell he saw what Wes could be. And then to me, it's kind of funny because Peyton is the guy. I think everyone will now say Brady. For a long time, it's who's better, Brady or Manning? I think everyone now is like Tom, but and Peyton with he's Omaha in this offensive mind, and he is a great offensive mind. Don't get me wrong. You kind of saw after what Welker was doing, then you see the Anthony Gonzalez, Austin Collies kind of doing that for Indy, and they weren't doing that before. They had the Harrison Wayne, and then they had the tight end with like a Pollard. They had Stokely, but they weren't using Stokely like that.
So I'm going to say this, and I don't mean this as any disrespect, but he brought back the white boy wide receiver. He did it. He's the GOAT. He's the GOAT.
Absolutely. 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 He deserves some praise for that.
Yeah.
like I think like a little mention in the Hall of Fame, like bringing it back. Like he did, he gave it some because it was like an extinct species.
Yeah.
For a little
yeah, you
bit.
Get a,
it was like,
a Tom
yeah,
Waddle
remember,
here and
remember
there,
Steve Largent,
something like
yeah,
that. But
yeah,
it wasn't.
That's the last one.
He brought him back, and he brought him back strong because he gave him a yeah. career, man. I give him credit.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
But he brought it. That now it's a lot. Now it's not, you know,
a lot
Cole
of them,
Beasley
dude.
Out there now. So, okay, it's like you.
Christian McCaffrey is fighting the fight for the running back.
Yeah,
right now.
So you're right about that, but it's.
Yeah,
he is.
Not that
he is.
Oh,
no,
wow,
he don't have any
no.
DBs, you know. Right, you know.
He was trying.
That. Right, but Jason
corners.
Seahorn.
Okay.
Yeah, at least not DB. There's safeties, not corners. Yeah, right. Because you know there's some safety, but corners.
Yeah,
Jason. I think
a shame because
Seahorn might have put.
He's a great athlete, man. He wanted to return
extinct.
Punts and blew his knee out, and I think that was it. Yeah.
For Seahorn, talk about the New York. You always talk about like the West Coast bite, which definitely was a thing, and we still see it now. Because you're right, I think Larry Fitz, Arizona's, you know, Southwest, but he's affected by that, in my opinion. I agree with you, but you know, there's always the New York hype, and talk about riding it so hard. Was Jason Seahorn.
Yeah.
With all the commercials he was in, and I'm like, this guy, he don't do nothing out there. He ain't good. And Jason Seahorn was like, for a while, one of the more popular players in the game, and I'm like, it doesn't make sense to me. So, talk about the
yeah.
opposite
no,
effect.
I agree.
You
I
riding
agree.
That wave,
but
that was
– Again, he was fighting the fight.
Seahorn,
so they had to keep
too.
They had to keep him alive.
He was fighting the fight. But you ready to – we're going to do the redraft on the top 10, and I will read out what the actual top 10 were before I kick it off to Jose with the first pick. But we look at, you know, first pick, the Chargers take Eli Manning at Ole Miss. Obviously, that gets traded.
Swing and a miss.
Second pick, Oakland takes Robert Gallery. Big tackle out of Iowa. Interesting because he's a swing and a miss as a tackle. They moved him inside and was a good guard for, you know, like 8 years in the league and with the Raiders, but definitely not a number two overall pick and definitely not a tackle. And I feel like for me, this is someone that jumps out to me. That's a product of, even though it's 16 years ago, the older way of looking at the draft. And I think nowadays, Robert Gallery would not have been people would have known not to take him there. Like he showed obvious signs that he is not an NFL tackle. And I think he's kind of like, it's funny to look at him because I'm like, yeah, that you still, you know, not that long ago and the internet was prevalent and we were watching college football everywhere, ESPN, the draft has come a long
he
way
got that,
in these years. And I think
that,
he's
that
a big
combine
example
hype.
Of that. Yeah. So we look at number three, the Cardinals take Fitzgerald out of Pittsburgh. Four, the Giants take Rivers, QB out of NC State, and the Giants and Chargers swap quarterbacks. Five, Sean Taylor, safety out of Miami. Cleveland at six takes Kellen Winslow the second, tight end out of Miami. The Lions, this is when they had that receiver run, Roy Williams out of Texas for Detroit. Eight, and this is one I argue with a lot
definitely.
Of people. I won't call him a bust, but to me, disappointment, always overhyped.
He's definitely
– corner out of VTech.
He's
you're
closest
– he's,
guy, he's on the cusp of that
Hall.
Bust list. You know, he got all that hype. Was like the defensive Michael Vick, and, you know, he was super fast. And, you know, he had a couple of decent seasons, but, man, like – He should have been up. He had all the tools, right? Like, I mean, you can say that about most of these guys, but he was fast. I'll give him that. But definitely not the eighth pick in the draft.
Yeah. And we look nine. Jacksonville took Reggie Williams out of Washington,
who had a better career
than
10.
The Texans,
D'Angelo
Hall. Duncan Robinson, a corner out of South Carolina. So. I agree. I agree. And I think,
yeah,
before we get just real quick, Hall gets it. He has numbers, but I think it's misleading. It's like, if you're a shutdown corner, you're not supposed to have that many picks because they're afraid to throw to you. Hall got, and to me, yeah, also, he had a few games that he got like three picks, and that made his season look bigger than it was. But Hall never stepped up to the plate to me.
He definitely
against
did.
That great receiver where it's like, okay, D'Angelo Hall against him. And he got burned a lot and felt was just,
Talk about I feel like he had a better career with Washington than he had with
D'Angelo
Atlanta.
Hall. Yeah, I agree. I agree. Definitely. So, Jose, I'm kicking it off to you. So we're going in order. And it's really, it's not like, oh, who's charging
so,
what their position needs.
I wish I had that ESPN.
It's the best players.
That little music. But, so I'm going with.
Yeah, I know, right?
And again, like, I did look at the team a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't go needs. I'm not the type of GM that goes by needs. I'm going best available player at every draft, every pick I have. I just think that's the way to go if you're a GM. But again, I know some GMs don't. I know some teams, they definitely go by need, but I'm not. So for me, where's my list? Here we go. So I'm going to shake it up a little bit. There's no trade between the Chargers and Giants in my draft. I'm going to go with, to me, the best available player. I'm also keeping Drew Brees. I'm going Larry Fitzgerald, number one with the Chargers.
I can't argue that. I think if in real life, Drew Brees stays in San Diego with this pick, and the Chargers are battling.
Yeah,
and they're taking a Super Bowl title either away from Peyton or New England with this pick, because if you have Fitzgerald, Gates, LT, and you know Drew Brees wasn't. We, you know, he grew into it more in New Orleans. Drew Brees
This is an offense that's tough to
this
stop.
This is a run that's unprecedented, you know. Yeah. So I can't argue that at all. I will say with number two, Oakland Raiders, it kind of fits. It's funny that they wanted tackle help and they got the wrong guy, but I'm going to go with, out of Arkansas, Jason Peters at number two. It fit with what they needed, what they actually – the position they took in the draft. Instead of Robert Gallery, I get a guy – and Peters did battle injuries, but still he's been playing since. So he's still playing. And talk about a left tackle that really would have helped the Raiders for all these years in the 2000s into the 2010s. They would have been
wrong
set
there,
at left
again,
tackle
I,
for a
he
decade
would have been my number
plus
two pick
with Peters.
If I would have – remember that he was in his draft. All right. So I'm going at number three. And it's the Arizona Cardinals pick. And the first quarterback is going off the board. I'm going to go Ben Roethlisberger to Arizona. It was a tough choice here. I almost went Rivers. But I just think Ben was the best quarterback out of the three overall. You know, you're teaming Ben up with Anquan Boldin now. You know, that's probably be his best weapon since, well, Antonio Brown. But I don't know. I think Big Ben here, it's a good fit. They definitely need the quarterback in Arizona at this time. I think their starter was like Josh McCown, which is crazy because I think he's still playing. But, number three, I'm going Big Ben.
No, can't knock that. I think, that's – it is the way to go. For me at number four, the New York Giants.
Shake it up.
I'm gonna go Vince Wilfork. I'm gonna shake it up there because I think Vince Wilfork, you know, what he did at that nose tackle position doesn't get talked about. You know, they see like he's, you know, the big body and he's a colorful personality, but people don't. He for a while. It became like the two anchors and the guy. And we know how Belichick is with replacing guys. It was like he's not letting go of Brady and Wilfork. And that says something to me on how important Vince Wilfork was to that Patriot defense. And then if we can look at it, imagine how great – and it would have been a different D-line, obviously, and that D-line was built on speed. But if you can plug in Vince Wilfork with Tuck, Strahan, OC Umenyora, he takes up, you know, he's going to take up two, maybe three blockers. That pass rush would have been unbelievable, I feel. So, I think Vince Wilfork, I think he will get into the Hall of Fame. I don't know if he'll be a first ballot guy, but what he did and how he played, you know, that kind of gap nose tackle position,
yeah,
was great. And, you know, you look at like what Saragusa and Adams did for the Ravens, they were just cloggers to me, and they did their job. Wilfork was a producer.
Yeah, he's definitely not just a clogger. I agree with that 100%.
So number four for me is
it's funny, like his post career, he's getting more commercials than he did when he was playing. But great, great talent, great, great player. He will be in the Hall of Fame. I agree with that. But so at number five, Joe Gibbs is going crazy, man. He's ecstatic. So I had one player, but these players keep dropping. So at number five, a team who desperately needed a quarterback. And again, I'm not just going by need. I'm going by the next best player, in my opinion. I'm going Phillip Rivers, number five, to the Redskins, which, you know, again, if you look at need as well, this team definitely, that's what this team was missing. Not just missing. I mean, they had a lot of other holes. But, you know, Phillip Rivers could have played – for Washington for the next 10 years. And the one thing that they could not find in all these free agents they were trying to find and all these draft picks was a quarterback. This would have ended that. And you know, they would have gotten their guy. And Joe Gibbs would have gotten probably the best quarterback he's ever had. You know what I mean? So I'm going number five. I was going Sean Taylor, but I didn't think Rivers was going to drop. Rivers is my top guy on the board, so I'm going Rivers.
Yeah, it's tough. I feel like Wilfork's more of a Hall of Famer, in my opinion, than Rivers is, and that's why I kind of went there, and I think he's the best player available. And also, what we talked about, I don't think Rivers does well in New York. Now, I think that's a great pick, what you said, because I think, even though D.C. is a big media, it's not as big as New York, but it's a bigger media market, but I do think with Joe Gibbs there, and I think people kind of knocked down what Gibbs' second run in Washington. He got into the playoffs, and they, you know, they didn't have a quarterback, and, you know, we know how Dan Snyder is. He's crazy, but I do think that would have been a great fit, you know, to have one of the great offensive masterminds.
They're drafting Cooley later
to
on.
Kind of guide you in there. And remember, he had Clinton Portis there as a running back.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, drafting Cooley. Santana Moss is around this time playing. I think Rivers would have done.
Yeah, I think DC.
I like that
and
pick.
It's a small enough market for him to be okay.
In real life too.
Oh, great offensive mind.
Yeah, and I think Joe Gibbs, veteran coach, you know, king of Washington. Yeah, he would have known what to do with Rivers and that spunk. And that's why I call it. It's fun. He's not like a trouble. He just talks a little too much.
He could have 10 kids in DC.
He's always daggummit and doggone it and, you know, all that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Literally.
I'm like, man, this is freaking like the Waltons or something. He just keeps them coming, but keeps them coming. Hey, big up to Phil, but yeah, Phil, you know, that foghorn, leghorn thing would have done well with Joe Gibbs, I feel. So I like it, and I had him at number five because it's what happened, and I will go because I do believe you never know, but barring a crazy injury, I think this guy just would have been a Hall of Famer. Sean T, I think I got to put him there because he was in that little bit of time, the impact he's made on the NFL, the highlight reel you still see. The versatility, not just a big play, but like you said earlier, he could do both cover and stop the run.
That makes
sense.
And then I'm trying to think back.
I think he would have been great.
Probably other than Fitzgerald, he might have had the more immediate impact of any player in his draft. Like just step in and play at a high level. Again, I think Fitzgerald kind of was a notch above him, but not too high.
Great
up.
Point.
So yeah.
Yeah, I'm honestly, I think you're right. I'm looking.
Yeah, it's with the Bears.
Sean Andrews came in really well. Tommy Harris with the Bears. People forget about him. But I think.
So I'm at number seven.
At the
top
are Fitz and Sean T. So I agree.
Matt Millen. Good point. And I'm looking at, I just drafted Joey Harrington the year before. So I know. So I got to stick with my guy, but I'm going with the guy who this organization has been trying to fill these shoes, this position for a long time. Trying to replace Barry Sanders since 98. So I'm going to go with the running back. I'm going Steven Jackson here, number 7. I think you just plug him right in.
I like
and
that.
He helps Joey Harrington out a little bit.
I like it.
That Lions running game back to where it used to be.
Okay. So I'm going at number 8. I'm going to go with Atlanta.
Yeah, that's going crazy right now. Yeah.
And this is, you know, Mike Vick's still there, the Vick experience and all that. That's really hot. Yeah, he's on the cover of Madden. You know, Michael Vick is he's the human highlight film. They got Jim Moore Jr. We don't know how bad he is yet. We're still naive and stuff like that. We don't know what Vick's going to do in a few years. But, hey, Atlanta's on the rise at this point, and they're exciting to watch. And they're built on, you know, a run game, Vic running around and kind of running with his legs and making some plays here and there, and the defense. No. And I'm going to look at this defense, which was good.
Yeah.
Wasn't great D. And they needed a tougher D to me in that division at the time. Remember how tough Tampa was, how tough Carolina with Peppers was, and all that. I'm going to go to this guy, this dude from Idaho.
Yep.
But sneakily kind of reminds me of Kevin Green in that, like, man, like the way they play, yep, their personalities. And also it's like, oh, wow. Like he can be a Hall of Famer. I didn't think about it. And that's how Kevin Green was to me. Like all the other stuff you forget, like, yeah, his numbers. Yeah, he could. And Kevin Green's in the Hall of Fame. And I think Jared Allen kind of fits that to me. So I'm going to go number 8, Jared Allen. And I think he would have made a great impact on that Falcons team. And really helped out. I got to go with him. I think if Steven Jackson could have gone to me.
Yeah, I had him at that, I had him at 8.
You took him at number 7.
I had him at 8 as well. To Atlanta. I think, you know, you team him up with, you know, Ed Jackson, Patrick Kearney, Keith Brooking. I think now that defense is elevated and it makes Atlanta a really, really tough matchup for a lot of teams, because obviously we all knew what they were doing offensively with, you know, Vig, Warren Dunn and all those dudes and Crumpler and all that. So, you know, I think adding Jared Allen here, I agree 100%. That's who I was going with. That's where I was going with at number 8. So at this point, you know, I'm a little torn now because my board has changed big time. And, you know, Jacksonville Jaguars, and a couple players that were on my top of the board are gone. You know what I mean? So I'm going to go, even though we have Byron left, which I'm going to go quarterback here, and I'm going Eli Manning here. I didn't think he was dropping from 1 to 9.
Not bad. Bravo. Bravo. Really? Mm-hmm. He was going to be lower for me, but I like that. I think Eli would have fit really well there.
I almost went another route, and I'll get into that in a little bit.
I got to give it to you. I like that pick. So, okay. Yeah, I definitely want to hear. I want to hear who you would have went. But number 10, Houston, the struggle is real, you know. We see we got David struggling, a lot of things going on. I could look at Bob Sanders, and you know, Bob Sanders I think would have been great if, but too injury prone. And even in what he did, you know, I think Peyton Manning does not win a Super Bowl in Indianapolis if Bob Sanders does not come back for that final stretch. I really think Peyton Manning will be a Hall of Famer. His legacy's different. I think Tony Dungy is not a Hall of Famer without Bob Sanders. And I, because they, that year in 06, they were last with the run D. And I remember Maurice Jones-Drew and Fred Taylor just running up and down the field on them.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
It was ugly. And by the way, I think Eli would have done great with MJD and Fred Taylor and that defense. Remember that Henderson Stroud D back then? Eli would have fit in very well. So I, you know, just kudos to you. That would have worked. But
okay.
I'm going to go number 10. I'm going to go with Houston. And I'm going to go with Wes Welker. I'm going there because I think he could do it all. And he could be that great returner for you, that great punt returner that you need, all-purpose yards. And also, if you have the mind to see what he can do, and he can be that safety blanket for David Carr getting hit all the time, Wes Welker would have fit there. And we see what he's done. And he was not just a product of systems because he produced
in Denver.
You know, there's a reason they got a second and a seventh for him, because he produced in Denver and was really vital to me for helping Peyton, you know, get back on track after his neck injury and being that security blanket. Wes Welker was a very good player and had a run. I mean, from 07 to 2012, the most prolific QB receiver tandem, Tom Brady and Wes Welker. That says something to me. So there's a lot of guys who, to me,
so was I.
You know, even Vilma. I like Vilma was the guy. I was down to those two guys for me. It was Vilma and Welker. But Vilma, I thought, honestly, Jose, his run was longer than it was. It's not that long, and that's where I went with Welker. Welker had a longer run, and like you said, he changed the game. And I don't really – there's some people who are hard with Hall. I don't know if he could put him in the Hall of Fame or not. His impact is, like you said, it changed the game, and he has that kind of impact in what we see in the NFL today.
I almost went Vilma 9. So
with that,
just because
number 10,
if you put Vilma behind Stroud and Henderson, I think that's 130, 40 tackles a year. You know what I mean? And you pair him up with Darryl Smith, who they took in the second round. I think that defense is lights out. But I think, you stick Eli Manning in with those running backs, that running game, and that's, you know, pretty good defense. I think he has a lot of success. And in Jacksonville, that media market, I think he would thrive down there. At 10, I went Sean Andrews. Just to solidify that offensive line, which is historically bad, you know, and we talk about, you know, David Carr and the struggles and how many times he was being sacked year in and year out. I can't knock that Wes Welker pick. It's a really good pick, because I think he would have helped out that offensive line and David Carr with those little short passing games, with the short passing game and getting that ball out of there quickly. Because again, just because you're getting sacked, and I know you could speak to this more, but just because you're getting sacked doesn't mean it's all due to offensive line play, you know. So it's again, but if you stick Sean Andrews in there, I think you stick him in right guard, he's going to solidify that offensive line. And you know, I just think he's an immediate impact, and he's definitely going to help that Houston team immediately. But again, I can't go wrong. You can't go wrong with Welker either.
Yeah, I think Sean Andrews definitely was hot.
I agree.
I looked at him. Probably, I'll say, be honest, Vilma, you know, seeing their career, I thought of him first over Sean. The only reason why I would have, because you're right, Houston needed O-line help badly. Sean, even outside of the mental health things that what took him, you know, affected his career. When he played, he still was injury prone too. And that, to me, more than if he was, you know, even if you take the broken leg in 04, but then 05, 06, 07, he was healthy, fine. But you look at 04, the leg, 06, he gets hurt at the playoff game, and that carries into 07. And he was injury plagued. And I think that's why I kind of went with Welker as well. You get stability there instead of Sean Andrews, who I love him.
I agree.
Was great when he was out there.
But very good point. Yeah, but I'm honestly Sanders surprised how much we agreed on this.
You know what I think it is? I think this is the tougher ones will be when there's not. I'm surprised.
It's deep. It's a deep draft.
Is in this draft. And even, you know, not even like the top heavy is better than I thought. Yeah, there's a lot of like really good players who maybe even weren't superstars. Some were superstars, but kind of faded. And then others were like good quality Pro Bowl level.
Yeah, when I started seeing names, and now I'm like kind of mad at myself that I didn't remember Welker and Jason Peters. But yeah, I agree. Top to bottom, this is a really deep draft. And not only were there a lot of guys who were great talent, and I think you just kind of just spoke to this a little bit, but there was a lot of good, just good players, like to stick in your team and kind of, you know, to help a team get better. So no, this was a good start to our redrafting careers.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's fun. I think the disagreements will come when you there's some drafts that are like slim pickings, and it's a big tail off, and then it's like, where are we going from here? But
yep.
Nah, man, this is fun, and you know, this will be something we're going to do in the future, you know, with NFL and NBA drafts as well. So look, this is also another new segment we're adding to the show. But man, we're going to keep coming, and you know, we have fun with the comedy and the wrestling. We love that, but we're going to be giving you, you know, the classic sports like we do.
Oh yeah,
we're coming back strong with it. And Jose, I'm ready to run. I'm ready to run, man. We got Thanksgiving next week. Yeah, I know, got some time off.
Yeah,
and
we'll see. We'll see what's
knows?
Going on.
We don't
but
know.
Definitely,
I'm not going to say it's a promise, but
crazy excited about these next couple topics, you know, we have cooking, knows? And yeah, I'm sure the listeners are going to love them.
Absolutely.